Coming up, we will talk with a former head of the Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, about the flaws in America's approach to national security and how we can better protect ourselves. And we're going to have a lot to talk about, especially in light of that recently foiled terrorist plot involving another underwear bomb. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, May 10th. Our guest is the author of Permanent Emergency, Inside the TSA and the Fight for the Future of American Security. Kip Hawley, who is a former TSA administrator, is now working as a private consultant. We will talk with him about the lessons learned from this most recently foiled terrorist plot involving a plane headed for the United States. We will talk about ways he thinks the TSA could better handle airport security, and we will welcome your questions and your concerns, too. If you could change anything about the TSA, what would it be? Or are you okay with the security measures that you need to go through to get on a plane? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Kip Hawley, author of Permanent Emergency, Inside the TSA and the Fight for the Future of American Security, joins us from Pebble Beach, California, by telephone. Good morning. Good early morning to you.
Good morning, Joy.
It's good to have you with us.
My pleasure.
Well, you know, I laughed at this blog that you wrote. You called it Underwear Brief. What can we learn from Underwear 2? What can we learn from Underwear 2?
Well, I've got 6 points up there, but the obvious ones are that Al Qaeda is still looking to knock down planes after Bin Laden. I think one of the thoughts was that Bin Laden was fixated on taking down aircraft, and it's interesting that a year after Bin Laden, that they're still working the same projects to take down airplanes, and that they're after explosives, and explosives is the way they do it. They're after catastrophic attack, and it goes to the point of focusing the TSA on explosives and maybe less on some of the fewer threats. It shows tremendous intelligence work that, not surprising probably, because they've known about this bomber for at least, say, 2.5 years, and have applied all the resources of the intelligence community to track this guy and see what he was doing. And it's outstanding work that they got, or the Saudis got, somebody inside the plot. So that that just demonstrates the connection with intelligence. And the more interesting lessons, the less obvious lessons, are that we ask a lot of questions about body scanners in the United States, which is a good topic of conversation. But it's the foreign airports, and specifically the ones that don't have the money to buy expensive scanners, that really we need to be looking at. What are they doing as a replacement for, you know, checking for body bombs? And that's really, if I were looking at the whole thing, that's the thing I would zero in on and say, That's what are we doing there? Go beef that up. And one of the ways the TSA does that is they send air marshals out. And I know in this case that they pretty much flooded that part of the world and flights coming from that part of the world with air marshals, so that air marshals who do more than sit on planes waiting for somebody to rush the cockpit, they're out in the boarding area. They're undercover. Mm-hmm. And they provide a lot of security. So those are some of the things I think are lessons learned.
Well, that's interesting. No, because I was going to say this flight was going to originate from, wasn't it, from Yemen?
Well, the passenger was going to originate from Yemen, and then he was going to. Well, I think they didn't book the flight, so we don't really know. But there is no direct service from Yemen to the United States. And so what he would do is fly to, say, Dubai, or as happened before, go to Amsterdam or some other major airport that connects, So the idea is he would pass through security in Yemen, be able to easily get through there, and then once he's in the system, move around a little bit past security, except that usually, you know, or in virtually all cases, there is extra screening for flights to the United States. So he would, again, have to go through security at where his transfer airport was going to be, Paris or London, Amsterdam, wherever.
Yeah, and I was that. So it is a good point that if that airport isn't doing the sophisticated body scanning or pat-downs, someone like this could get through, and that flight could be doomed.
Well, we know that as well as they know that. So that in response to that, we have in airports when you travel abroad. If you are traveling within the EU, for instance, if you're going from Italy to France to Great Britain and then fly home, you probably don't need extra screening because all of those EU airports are up to good standard. And however, if you're coming from outside that zone, like for instance, if your trip originated in Yemen, they would put you through specific screening, maybe even at the gate before you get to the U.S. bound flight. So it would be you'd be then going through U.K. security or Amsterdam security, and they now with 2.5 years after the underwear bomber, everybody is focused on underwear bombs, and it's a little curious to me that they're coming back with pretty much the same device. Perhaps with an improved detonator, but that the device is essentially the same after everybody in the world's been training for 2.5 years on that device. It's surprising.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I wondered if this version of the underwear bomb was somehow going to get through TSA security as we know it.
Well, I don't think so, but one of the other questions is that it appears this particular bomb maker is obsessed with getting through the layers of security, but I question his bomb-making skill in the sense that he's spending so much time figuring out intricate ways to smuggle a bomb on board that the first bomb he made just flat-out didn't work. And if all he did was fix the detonator on this one, I would suspect this one wouldn't work either. And one of the hidden parts of U.S. security is that the things that we do, as much as everybody hates the baggie and liquid restrictions, that it takes the bombs that will actually blow up a plane and makes them not feasible. You can't, if you're an Al-Qaeda guy, you can't be making those bombs because they won't get through. And it forces them to go off into these exotic plots where they design underwear bombs, and next they'll probably have cavity bombs. And those things are much, much less effective than an 18-ounce bottle of hydrogen peroxide that you've tuned up properly. That will destroy a plane.
Oh, did you say cavity bomb?
Yes.
And that's what I'm imagining, right?
Yes, and that's all the rage because everybody wants to come up with what the next thing is. Well, they've gone to the underwear bomb now. And this particular bomb maker did in fact make one and used his own brother to deliver it to a Saudi prince, and it did in fact kill the guy carrying it, but not the intended target. So I don't think it's a very effective method for a plane because if you can't even kill the guy next to you, you're certainly not going to be able to knock a plane down.
So does TSA need to do something differently to try to detect a cavity bomb, or do you think it's not a threat worth changing procedures?
I would certainly not go. I don't think it's a bomb that's mm-hmm. viable. But you raise a really good point, which is what's the job of TSA? Mm-hmm. Is the job of TSA to prevent any trace of an explosive to get on a plane, or is the job of TSA to stop only bombs that would actually blow up the plane? Because I think that's at the heart of this this pat-down problem we have in the United States now is I think the TSA officers are being asked to put their hands in places that would detect trace amounts of explosive, but not enough to knock down a plane. And if you just said, look, American public, don't be squeamish if somebody brings on an Abdulmutallab bomb that fizzles, basically, or possibly kills one or two people. We're not going to be poking our hands into your private parts to find traces of explosive. We will do what is necessary to stop bombs that could reasonably destroy the plane, and that involves a very much more acceptable type pat down that does not go after, get all the trouble whether you're 4 years old or 94 years old or 44 years old.
So we wouldn't have to have TSA agents touching our junk, so to speak?
Precisely. Nobody wants that, especially the officers. Imagine, your work is to stop terrorist attacks, and the training is, all right, now you've got to go all day long. They want to be working on counterterrorism and using their security training instead of being put in a position with the passengers, their neighbors, of being in that position and being called all sorts of names. I think it really is time to get past that. It brings down the total security value of our network.
So just do away with that pat down entirely?
Yeah. I'd change it. What I would do is use those explosive trace detection machines they have at airports that the cotton swab where they will rub a piece of cotton on your computer or possibly your hands.
Yes.
That's a very simple but very effective test because explosive particles, like the ones used in the underwear bomb, can go under the skin. So if you've been near it, and in contact with it, you can't wash it off your hands. It stays under your skin for several days, and these trace detectors will find evidence of it. And so you can get up in the mid-thigh area, let's say, and do some trace detection there that will tell you if the person has got a big enough bomb to blow up a plane a few inches north of that. There will be traces further down, and that's what you need to do. I mean, you have to be aware that they would like to use an underwear bomb, and so you have to check for it. But you don't have to. It's all degrees of risk management. How much do you have to go through to be sure there's not one speck of explosive? And I would say in that trade-off, we've just gone too far looking for too little.
Yeah. Does it do a lot of good to randomly pull people from the security line like I was the last time I think I flew to have that little handy wipe wiped over my hands to see if I had traces of explosives?
Yes. Did you get a pat down?
No, I did not.
Yeah. So that to me is a excellent way of using random to have a very high security value that is not that intrusive of you, but it is highly effective.
Okay, yeah, this was I think even before I went through there was a body scan at this airport, but I think it was one where you're before you even get to that line, randomly people are pulled out and the little handy wipe goes over your hands.
Yes, and what they're doing there is very meaningful security because that is a super test. And if you're standing waiting in line, you're not slowing down the flow of traffic, but you're adding security value, and you're not being very intrusive to the passenger. So, to me, that's an excellent use of time and equipment because it doesn't slow you down, it doesn't anger you, and it provides quite significant security value. And it also the other thing they're doing, I'll just tell you. Is they have what are these behavior observation people who watch lines, and then when they send an officer in with a swab to come up to you to do your hands, they're looking at the other passengers. And if there is a particular passenger who starts edging away or otherwise appears to be nervous that they're coming with the trace detection, that is something that they would want to check out. So it's not only security, you know, by doing it to you, it also sort of generates an environment where somebody who has got something to be worried about is going to behave in the way that will be picked up.
On Facebook, Chris writes, what we can learn from the latest underwear bomber threat is that it was foiled without any need for the TSA or their groping or radiation.
Well, I don't think we need the groping, as we just discussed, but the point that Chris might want to consider is that why were they using an underwear bomb? The reason they were using the underwear bomb is because they can't get a hydrogen peroxide liquid bomb through. They can't get a shoe bomb through. So they're going off looking for less effective bombs, and that R&D cycle gave intelligence enough time to work up a plan and get the agent in there and find the underwear bomb. So it's all connected. People see TSA and TSA aggravates them so much by these pat downs and what have you, and apparently, in this person's opinion, the possible radiation effect. It is all the same effort, and they do in fact coordinate activities and are talking to each other all the time. Much more coordinated than perhaps you think.
We're talking with Kip Hawley. He is a former TSA administrator. He's currently working as a private consultant, and he is the author of Permanent Emergency, Inside the TSA and the Fight for the Future of American Security. And we are talking with him about the future of American security, talking with him about some of the flaws in America's approach to national security and how we can better protect ourselves, and talking about some of the lessons that we can learn from this very latest foiled terrorist plot involving another underwear bomb. We welcome your thoughts, your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Very happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned, and I hope you are with us tomorrow at this time. It's another edition of our Week in Review every Friday between 8 and 9. I'll get two perspectives on state and national news, including primary elections this week in Wisconsin and around the country. It's our Week in Review tomorrow at this time. Right now, we are talking with Kip Hawley, who is a former TSA administrator and author of Permanent Emergency, Inside the TSA and the Fight for the Future of American Security. And our next caller is John in Milwaukee. Hello, John.
Hello, Joy. And just on the talk of random, I'm going to watch what's at random, Brown or Pritt.
We're losing you, John. I'm sorry.
My question is did this underwear bomber have help getting around security like the last one?
Did the last one have help getting around security, and do you know it didn't get that far this time around, did it, Kip Hawley?
No, they selected the bomber who was an undercover agent, but they hadn't gotten to the tactics of which flights and all that kind of thing. And I don't know whether they would have had help. They obviously would have figured out an airport that they thought they could beat, whether that was because they had some insider support or whether they observed security enough to know that that particular underwear bomb would go through.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. We go to Shahzad in Hudson now. Hi, Shahzad.
Hello. I have talking about the flaws in the way America is dealing with the security towards from terrorists. I suppose we can be staying busy with figuring out the underwear, or then the printer, and then the socks, and then the hat. But we should be focusing more on the root cause. I come from Pakistan, and I can tell you the root cause is terrorists' main motivation is hate, and that hate is taught in schools and mosques, and Turkey is the only exception that doesn't do it. because they are the ones who changed that. That's why we don't see terrorists from Turkey, but we see terrorists from every other country. And on the part of TSA, I think as a now a new American, I am willing to sacrifice my privacy for a little bit so that the rest of the people in the plane can travel with ease and can be put at ease. So this is just a little sacrifice we all have to give in order to make sure the security is ensured. We are doing the defense with TSA, but the real big picture is we need to stop these people from trying to doing this, and that cannot be stopped unless the books taught in these countries are changed. And I'll listen offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Shahzad. Your response to that, Kipali?
Well, I think Shahzad has hit the nail on the head, and it's exactly right. We can't be keeping ourselves in what I call in the book a state of permanent emergency, just you know, running from pillar to post, trying to stop whatever the new plot is. That we have to have a national and indeed international strategy that looks at some of these root causes and encourages or discourages or whatever however you do it the underlying atmosphere that allows Al-Qaeda to recruit. And one of the things we haven't figured out in the United States, and we can't discount, is how the heck do they keep coming up with more and more, it seems like endless supply of young people who had, including like Bryant Yelvinus, who from Long Island, has been in the news recently, was an altar boy and a Little League baseball player. How is it that this ideology is able to take people like that and turn them into willing suicide bombers? And I think we need to understand that and not just relegate terrorism to a few evil, crazy people. There's something else going on there that's attracting recruits that we need to identify. So I think Shahzad's point very, very well taken.
And we should not be trying to figure out if somebody's going to have a hat bomb next or a sock bomb next.
Well, you have to be aware of those things. And I mean, TSA's job is very simple: stop attacks against the transportation network, particularly catastrophic loss, and especially airplanes. So they use technology, but they use intelligence. And I would like to see, one of the things I've suggested is they get rid of the standard operating procedure of pulling out Swiss Army knives and pointy objects and make it less about going through bags looking for objects and free up the officers to do more on explosives and that kind of thing.
Is it true that you're the reason why I need to put small bottles of liquids in baggies when I go through airport security?
Well, that's probably the short answer. Yes. Yes, do you have a question about that?
Well, no, the reason that is in place is because the liquid bomb is a threat to the airplane.
Well, you know, Joy, I was thinking the other night that the baggie is the inverse of this intrusive pat down, because they were both, in both cases, there were serious legitimate threats that we felt would knock down a plane. So in the liquids area, Al-Qaeda came up with a formula that was unknown to work by Western explosive scientists. It was a novel explosive, and it was undetectable by our screening methods, and we knew that it was much more powerful than anybody imagined and would absolutely take down a plane. So when faced with that, the first thing we did was ban liquids because we didn't know if there were other bombs in the system. Then 6 weeks later, we came back and said, well, we just can't ban liquids because, you know, all of the liquids that people really legitimately need to bring on trips, let's say you can bring any kind of liquid as long as it's in a small container. The small container, we got that thing from the national laboratories, and who who worked out what's called the critical mass of how big a container needs to be to allow a bomb to take down a plane. And we went a significant way below that critical mass and came to around the 2-3-4 ounce area as one that it didn't matter how many, or you know, what was in the bottle. Then we did the baggie, because the baggie, it does two things. It limits the number of bottles, and it also collects the vapor if there's hydrogen peroxide, so that it would be easy to detect by certain equipment that could look into the plastic bag and see if it had collected the vapor. So that, unpopular as it is, was a way of saying, we will accept if people want to bring in 3-ounce bombs on planes, they will do that. And they may kill one or two people, but they will not knock down a plane. And we went through the whole thing about 10 people bringing in 5 bottles each and mixing in the bathroom. There's a lot of analysis on that.
Yeah.
But it's the flip side of the pat-down, which said, we're faced with this underwear bomb, and we're not going to allow any variation. We're going to put our fingers all the way up there. And it's two different approaches.
I didn't have a big problem with the baggie. I remember when these rules first went into place, my liquid lip gloss, though, was going to be confiscated. I remember I didn't like that very much, but I think that was changed.
It was changed,
yeah.
And it was changed because it was stupid. There was no possibility you or anybody were going to put something in that liquid, you know, in your lip gloss. And the officers were having a hard time finding it. And this is what I heard from the officers, is making us look stupid, because people are saying, you're banning all this liquid, but I got through with my lip gloss. And so we just said, well, you know what, the lip gloss is just not a threat, so let's just tell that to the American public.
Yeah.
Say, okay.
And I remember lighters were once banned, and then that was changed as well. Why was that changed?
Well, I changed it
mm-hmm.
because Al-Qaeda, I knew from intelligence, was using electronic detonators, and they were 100% effective. And we saw Richard Reid try to light his shoes on fire. And the Congress passed a law saying we should ban lighters. Well, we were finding our officers were 1 in 3 bags had a lighter. So they're going through bags looking for lighters, pulling out lighters. And we did tests where we put fake bombs underneath the lighters, hidden underneath where the lighters were. And time after time, our officers just went in, found I call it an Easter egg hunt. Found the lighter and moved on. So we had to actually change the law to be able to say, no, we're not banning lighters. And that smoothed out the system and allowed it. Again, goes to the point of training the officers, you're after bombs, not these other mm-hmm. These other items.
Ellen in Brookfield is with us. Hello, Ellen.
Hi. Well, first of all, I want to say, when I travel, TSA people are the people I prefer to deal with in the private companies, because they are always professional. But first, secondly, I find it, I find that I don't believe in at all, until we don't allow computers and cell phones and the such on planes, because they're some of the most dangerous things we have, other than lip gloss. And, you know, because business would not put up with it. It hasn't been implemented, because business travel is, you know, bulk of travel, and business wouldn't put up with it. And yet, you know, we can do a lot of evil things with a computer. And we're told we can't turn them on, but do you really think that's going to stop somebody from turning it on?
Yeah. Ellen, thanks very much. Are the computers and cell phones a dangerous item to have on the airplane, Kip Hawley?
Not in themselves. They could both be used to initiate an explosion. But the FAA has some issues with the batteries because of possible fire hazard. But the and that thing about not turning your electronics on is not a TSA thing. TSA is looking to see whether they've put explosive inside your cell phone or laptop, and that's pretty much it for TSA. And so our technology is superb at finding those things. So that's really all that's going on there. And a lot of people assume that the FAA rules about your cell phone or turning electronics on are TSA, but they're not.
Our next caller is Patricia in Munising, Michigan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I want to first thank you for taking my call. And I have a medical condition that I had traveled with a catheter bag for years. And I also have a medical device in my back, so I always went through the pat-down. And I would be very upfront with them and say, I have a catheter bag on my right leg. And they would never check it. And it doesn't make sense to me, the inconsistency of the TSA check. They would not allow me to take a bottle of water on for a health issue, and I was going to drink the bottle of water, and yet they never check a catheter bag. Can you give me some insight into that?
Well, my insight would be what I call SOP-itis, which is they've got the standard operating procedure and are so bound by following what's that than the common sense. That's a nutty resolution in your case of because they can, if you have a liquid that you feel you need to bring on board, they have ways to test it. So it will take you a little bit more time. They just go get the handheld detector and use it. The trace detection that we were talking about earlier is a very good way of testing around whatever bag you would have for or whatever purpose, that without making it awkward, they can get a very good reading whether it's safe just by doing the trace detection. And one of the things that I've said is that we ought to allow what I call liquid lanes that let people bring whatever liquids they want, because we now have the capacity to detect threat liquids through those big x-rays. If you put your bottles out into a gray bin and run it through the x-rays, they just need to load software on the machines, and then you'd have that choice. And it just makes me go crazy, particularly since, as Joy mentioned, I'm the originator of the baggie, mm-hmm. that you don't need to do it anymore. If they would just load that software on the AT x-ray, you could bring whatever liquid you want in whatever size you want, as long as you didn't mind putting them out in the gray bin and going through that line.
We are talking with Kip Hawley. He is the author of Permanent Emergency, Inside the TSA and the Fight for the Future of American Security. We'll talk more with him about recommendations that he has that would improve airport security, change airport security for the better, and in just a moment. And we'll continue welcoming your questions and comments, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. How do you think we can improve our security, especially in terms of transportation security at airports? What have your experiences with the TSA been like? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up a little bit later this morning, it's Kathleen Dunn. After 10, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright will join Kathleen to discuss the discovery of her family's Jewish heritage. That's coming up after 10. We are talking with Kip Hawley. He's a former administrator of the TSA. He's currently working as a private consultant. He is the author of Permanent Emergency, Inside the TSA and the Fight for the Future of American Security. And you were also the author of a piece that we saw recently in the Wall Street Journal on why airport security is broken and how to fix it. We've talked some throughout this hour about ways that you see us fixing things, but maybe you can just kind of give us the cliff notes on that. How do we fix airport security?
Well, the big problem that's preventing us from fixing it is, I think, the divide between the public and TSA, that there is just a gulf that has arisen now where it's a toxic relationship as opposed to a supportive relationship. So what I say is we got five things we could do in the next, 6 months, maybe 3 months, that would get everybody's attention and would, I think, improve security and make it a much easier process. And the first thing is get rid of those prohibited items of sharp and pointed objects, Swiss Army knives, screwdrivers, because nobody is going to take over an airplane, including knives of all types, that nobody's going to take an airplane over with a knife at this point, and that it spends so much time fishing through bags looking for those objects when the officer should really be focused on explosives. So that would be number one, and it would speed up the lines tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is the liquid lane that I just talked about a minute ago, to allow people to give the people a choice if they wanted to bring whatever liquids they want and whatever size they want, if they're willing to wait a few extra minutes to go through a special liquid line. And then the third one is more giving the officers the it's what we talked about in that last call about the officers using their common sense and training and do things like the behavior observation and look at the back of the airport where there are all those airport workers out there that are not getting screened. I'm not saying you screen everybody the same, but you just have a lot more flexibility to look for the real threats. I think getting rid of baggage fees that airlines charge for checked bags is a security issue, because what happens is now everybody carries on the kitchen sink.
Yeah, that's right.
And,
yeah.
And it clutters up the checkpoint. It makes it harder for the officers to read the images. And it costs the TSA a ton of money in extra people to do that. And I would just trade off. There are some fees the airlines pay TSA. I would say keep your money, but just don't charge the public for the baggage fees. And that's the top four. And the fifth one is random, which is to allow the it's just like in any kind of security, bank security, credit card security, that there is a random component that looks out for, as you mentioned earlier, the sock bomb or the hat bomb, the one that you haven't thought of. If you've got a random component to it, it does protect you against things you don't expect. And my theory is if we do those five things, they could be done very, very, very quickly. And then at that point, I think the American public would be paying attention, and we could have a really good discussion about what we mean by risk management.
Let's take some more calls. We have Dan in Schulzburg with us now. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, well, I just want to say a quick quote. It's by FDR. The only thing we need to fear is fear itself. Yes, that's FDR. Yes. And with the TSA, it almost seems that every time a terrorist makes a move, they bump up security, and particularly like with the shoe bomber, making everyone take off their shoes, is kind of. It just kind of seems like whatever the terrorists do, they kind of almost seem like they're the puppet masters here, that we make a move, we can make the Americans dance, and it just seems like that's kind of what they want almost. Like, in the idea of fighting, standing up for freedom, is that not allowing your enemy to change you or change your way of life.
Yeah, what about that, Kipali? Let us wear our shoes.
Yeah, I think Dan makes a very good point. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to put the classified intelligence and the plots and things on a timeline as part of a story underneath the various security measures that went into place so that people can see. So in Dan's case, you would be able to see that taking off your shoes was not required for 5 years after Richard Reed, but that there were serious plots involving, there actually were active shoe bombs that we could not detect that intelligence was telling us were in the system, in the aviation system, and that they were planning to use against America. And we tried a lot of different ways to detect them, and they were not detectable. So here we were faced with intelligence that said there are new shoe bombs that look like street shoes, not like hiking boots. And they're coming, and you can't find them. And the only way we could be sure to stop them was to ask people to take off their shoes. So in some sense, that is reactive. But then on the other sense, what's intelligence for if you don't do something about it? So one of the deals I think the TSA has with the public is we only ask you to do things that are required for security, and when we can come up with a better way, we will remove the older measures. And that's one thing the TSA has not done so well, is gone back and pulled out older measures that are no longer needed. But I can tell you that in the 2006 through 2008 time period, there were active shoe bombs that, had we not asked people to take their shoes off, we would not have been able to detect.
Yeah, no, that is something that I don't think a lot of people knew about. So you say that information could have been shared and maybe we wouldn't have grumped so much about it?
Yes, but the way we got the intelligence was using agents who would have been killed if the information got out. And the trick for me, I'm not really an author. I was the head of TSA. I never thought about writing a book. But but getting the security agencies to clear off, I said, these stories, I mean, what really happened is incredible. There's one particular guy who was literally stalking TSA, working up plots and bombs to blow up planes that has never been reported in the United States. And this whole undercurrent of what really goes on in the intelligence world, I think if people knew that, it would help explain what's going on with TSA and take some of the mystery out of it, so it's not just up where you say we have to do it for security reasons. It will show, okay, this is the kind of thing that they're doing back there. And to my amazement, I got the CIA, NSA, FBI, everybody to clear off on these stories. So that's what's in the book.
But just to clarify, this was a necessary step for safety based on this intelligence, taking our shoes off. Is it still?
Well, I don't know. I've been out of the business. It's possible, and clearly the person who invents the shoe scanner that will stand up to the pounding at the airport is going to win the Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
So they're working very, very hard to get that.
Let's go to Matt in Milwaukee next. Hello, Matt.
Well, good morning. I'd like to say that I think it's sort of a philosophical trend in America to be very leery of granting other people any sort of authority over us, and I think that is probably behind a lot of complaints that you hear. But I've never really found TSA officers to abuse their authority, well, except for Miami. But other than that, I felt like I've been treated very fairly, and they've acted very professionally.
What happened in Miami? But be clean about it.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if your guest already knows this. But let's just say everyone was very petty. They contradicted each other. They disregarded the doctor's note. It was just a very frustrating situation.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the fact that you would call in to say that, because the officers are, across the country, my experience, outstanding. And I'll give a shout-out to the officers in Milwaukee, because I've been through Milwaukee a lot. I hadn't traveled through Madison. But you're right that it varies in terms of the management and officers, how motivated they are. And if passengers got to spend more than 20 seconds as they dash away from them, you know, really understanding who these people are and what they're there for, I think you get a different opinion. And that's one of the things that bothers me about this pat-down and some of the other things, is it puts the officers, who came to the agency to stop terrorist attacks and who worked their tails off with not that much pay and not much public love, it puts them in the position of taking the heat. So I really appreciate on your behalf the comment, the positive comment, and yes, on the negative, it's a function of management, and management having the employees engaged and working as a team, not bickering I think it's a good call.
Thank you very much, Matt. Paul in Green Bay sent an email. He wonders, what about having fingerprint or retina scanning as an optional line at airports? Those who don't have concerns about civil liberty violations could use this quicker line and allow some personal info to be tracked by the TSA. Others would be required to use a longer, more rigorously monitored line.
Well, that's a that is a possible solution, and I think we may have gotten to the point where we have technology to even go beyond that, because the airline reservation system gets to TSA directly, and they can do the their threat assessment basically on each flight, so that when you get to the checkpoint, they can have printed on your boarding card, encrypted in your boarding pass, instructions for what the checkpoint should do with you, so it can the extra biometrics are always an improvement in security. They do cost a lot, and there are some security issues with them, in the sense that for people born outside the United States, it's very hard to verify the underlying facts behind it, and it is possible to manufacture IDs just by making up a past that cannot be checked from a foreign country. But essentially, your point of doing the risk assessment up front and then making the checkpoint process move fast is dead on, and I would like to see that happen with all passengers, because we now have all passengers have their information sent in ahead of time, and by throwing in a little bit of random, you can make up for any mistake you might have if somebody has snuck past the system. But I think we're really pretty close to that that system.
We have just a minute or so to go. I'd like to just kind of get some concluding remarks from you about what you'd like to see happen in this fight for the future of American security.
Well, I'd like to see the American public back in the game, and that not have security done to them, but to have a discussion about risk management. Are we willing to let weapons on planes, be they knives or small trace amounts of explosives, that are we willing to let that happen? And if we are, then this whole security thing at airports could be dramatically improved, just amazingly faster, and the officers would be detecting things that would really destroy a plane, including unexpected type attacks. And it's a better security system, but anytime TSA, they try to back off this or that security measure, there are howls that come up, and it's impossible. So right now, they're in the position of just applying more and more security, and the public is just not accepting it. And this is bad for security, because in Israel, the public is right there with security services, and we need to get back to that point in the U.S. where the American public strongly participates in security.
Well, I know my friend who had a small Swiss Army knife confiscated would be all for what you're saying. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Kip Hawley, author of Permanent Emergency Inside the TSA and the Fight for the Future of American Security, former TSA administrator currently working as a private consultant. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for producing this hour and directing it, and thanks to Bill Martins for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardin. This is the Ideas Network.